I'm Shamita Basu, in for Tanzina Vega, and this is The Takeaway.
There is a real risk that you will trigger an outbreak that you may not be able to control, which in fact, paradoxically, will set you back, not only leading to some suffering and death that could be avoided, but could even set you back on the road to trying to get economic recovery.
This week, Anthony Fauci, the country's top medical expert for the COVID-19 crisis, testified virtually in front of the Senate Health Committee. He urged the country to refrain from opening up too early. And he said the death toll from the virus in the United States could be much higher than the reported 80,000 people so far. And as the health crisis continues, COVID-19 has also pushed us over the cliff toward an economic crisis. And we're still bracing for the impact. In the month of April alone, more than 20 million people filed for unemployment in the United States. And that is a staggeringly high number. The U.S. now has an unemployment rate of 14.7%. And to put that in perspective,
we have not seen anything that high since the times of the Great Depression. And even then, the rate took a year and a half to get very high. Here, it happened within a month.
That's Lane Windham. She's the associate director of the Kalmanovitz Initiative for Labor and the Working Poor at Georgetown University. The workers who are affected the most are, of course, those who are working in hospitality and service jobs. And there's something else striking about who's hit the hardest, though it's no surprise to economists who've seen this trend again and again.
We know that people of color and women are the most likely to have lost their jobs. The unemployment is hitting women and people of color even harder.
I spoke with Lane to discuss the significance of these numbers, along with Aaron Ross Coleman, an Ida B. Wells Fellow at the Tite Media Institute covering race and economics.
We know, for instance, that women and people of color earn less money and have less wealth. And what that means when they hit a time of unemployment and when they hit hard times is they have simply less to fall back on. So, you know, the fact that women only make 82 cents on the dollar to what men earn, Black women earn just 62 cents for every dollar earned by men. That means that at times of unemployment, when they lose their jobs, they just are going to be harder hit.
Aaron, can you say more about how these unemployment numbers break down across racial lines?
So when you disaggregate it, it's an even worse picture. Hispanic unemployment's at 18%, Black unemployment's at 16%. You have white and Asian unemployment are both at 14%. And you already are starting to see some of the disparate kind of breakdowns that have happened in past recessions during the Great Recession. It was similarly disparate. National unemployment was at 9%, and then Black unemployment was at 16%. And then going back to the Great Depression, you see similar kind of really big gaps with 24% nationally and 50% for Black people. So there's the old saying that when America gets a cold, Black Americans get the flu, and it's like now we all have coronavirus. So It's pretty tough.
Lane, what about the gender gap? Did unemployment shake out in a similar way in 2008?
In 2008, we saw that job losses were more heavily borne by men, often in the construction industry, for instance. Mm-hmm. This time around, it's different. Women are losing their jobs at a faster rate. The unemployment rate among women right now is 15.5% compared to 13% among men. That's a big gender gap. And we saw a gender gap, although it wasn't as large, in 2008, but it was reversed. So This time, because of the nature of the kinds of jobs that are being lost that tend to be more female-dominated, women are absolutely shouldering a lot of the burden in this round.
Aaron, we also saw a very long recovery process take place since 2008. And for many people, that recovery was only being felt recently. How do you perceive it will be for us to bounce back to a recovery from this?
Yeah, I think a lot of that depends on the public policy response and, you know, what policymakers decide to do to intervene. But right now, it's tough and there are a lot of obstacles ahead for a lot of families, for a lot of workers, particularly like Black and brown workers. You know, unemployment was just starting to dip down into the low single digits. You know, that was a talking point that Trump was very proud of, the lowest Black unemployment on record. And that's because you saw a recovery where, you know, more people were starting to join the labor force. Employers are becoming less discriminatory and, you know, who they would hire just based off of race and skill and stuff like that. So, you know, earlier last year, the end of last year, 2019, we were just getting to those really good kind of unemployment numbers where people were being able to participate. And now here we are at the worst recession since the Great Depression.
Lane, right now there's a lot of talk about essential workers. And I'm sitting in New York, and here many of those essential workers are Black and brown people. What might a recession look like for essential workers across the country?
One in three jobs held by women are considered essential. So a recovery for essential workers could mean that they have jobs, they have work, but will that work be healthy? Will it be safe? Will it be jobs that they can go to with confidence? And I'd say right now, many of those workers are reporting to work and are really risking the safety for themselves and for their families. And I think that, you know, we have a long way to go before those essential workers who we depend on, those cashiers, those nurses, those EMT workers, are fully protected and are fully safe.
You know, I'm thinking about unions and labor organizing. Lane, have we seen a difference between how unionized workers and non-unionized workers fared during past recessions? I'm curious how labor organizing can possibly help Black and brown people and women specifically.
So there absolutely is a union difference in terms of wages. You know, I mentioned before there's a gender wage gap, there's a race wage gap. Unions close that. And so, you know, a worker who has a union makes more money than those who don't. Women and people of color are even more likely to do better than their non-union counterparts. And so unions absolutely raise wages, increase benefits, and frankly, give workers more say at a time when they really need it at the workplace. You know, you saw that, I think, for instance, in some of the unionized grocery stores. Those were the first ones to have the plexiglass up, to be making sure that there was safety for their workforce. You know, and what we're seeing across the country is that there's lots more interest in unions. Lots of workers have been striking. Just since the beginning of March, there have been over 150 wildcat strikes. These are strikes that are not necessarily called by the union. They are from the grassroots when people feel that their safety is not being respected. And so there have been a number of strikes across the country. And I think there's also just been a renewed interest in general in the idea of organizing and unions.
Like, do we know if there are any organizations or at the local or state level, or even local or state level governments that are really bracing for what these unemployment numbers mean? Is anyone truly prepared for this?
I don't think so. I mean, recessions are something that, like, state and local officials really depend on the federal government for support, just because they oftentimes don't have the budgets that allow for kind of deficit spending in order to offset, you know, like cuts to their budget or just, you know, large scale stimulus. So it really often, in my experience, just speaking to economists and politicians, it's something that they're definitely relying on the federal government to help them get through, especially something of this size and scope.
I would just add to that, that in this country, it is very clear right now that the way that we do our social safety net is particularly poorly put together to deal with this kind of a massive pandemic, a huge crisis. You know, workers' health care comes through their employers. Up to 43 million people may lose their health care in this crisis. In addition, our unemployment is bifurcated. It goes through the states. It doesn't go through the federal level at one system. And so, you know, we are particularly poorly suited to dealing with this level of a crisis.
So in the absence of those kinds of social safety nets, like you said, Lane, what are some solutions that we can look to sort of soften the blow of this economic crisis?
I think that in the immediate term, the federal government has to step up. There needs to be more stimulus. We absolutely need that cushion in this country. And then I think that our leaders need to follow where the people are right now, which is that the people are demanding a more robust social safety net. People fully understand at this point why our employer-provided healthcare system is not working, why people need paid sick leave, why we need paid childcare. I think it's very obvious to people. And I think over the next several years that we may see leaders stepping up and beginning to make some really fundamental changes in policy in this country.
What have we learned from the past regarding the impact of recessions and rising unemployment numbers on elections? Like, how can we expect this to manifest itself at the polls this November?
I think one of the interesting things is just the way that this is kind of changing the way people are talking about the elections and the way the candidates are talking about themselves. Like, I think it was earlier last year that Bernie Sanders framed, you know, his democratic socialism in terms of what FDR did. Earlier this week, you see Joe Biden in New York Magazine, I believe it is, you know, framing his presidential candidacy in the terms of FDR. He wants to have an FDR-sized presidency. So, like, I think that's one of the ways previous recessions, especially like even depressions, is impacting just the kind of ways that politicians themselves are thinking about political economy and what they think it'll take to move voters, and also like what they think it'll actually take to pick us up out of this crisis.
It's interesting that Biden says he hopes to have an FDR kind of administration. You know, Roosevelt was pushed in many ways to implement much of the New Deal by working people who struck. There were major strikes throughout the country in 1934. And much of what Roosevelt implemented had actually been test-driven in the states at a local level before it was ever implemented at the federal level. And so I think that it's important to remember in the election that yes, of course, the power at the top makes a lot of a difference, but there is also lots happening at the local level, at the state level, and among working people. And we have to take a broad look during the election season.
Professor Lane Windham is the Associate Director of the Kalmanovitz Initiative for Labor and the Working Poor at Georgetown University. And Aaron Ross Coleman is an Ida B. Wells Fellow at the Tite Media Institute, covering race and economics. Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Shamita.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.